Welcome everybody to the Too High Podcast. I'm your host Seth Galina, alongside my co-host, Mr. Deontay Lee. Deontay, there's a video of me getting mossed on the internet. It's in a group chat right now. I just want to tell our listeners that it'll never see the light of day, so you can pretend it didn't happen. Anyways, what's going on, D? Big weekend college football, big weekend in the NFL. Let's get into it. No time for small talk. We're getting into it right away because we want to talk about the Rams offense. So you watched Rams Colts yesterday. What did you see from Stafford and the McVay and the Rams offense?
I mean, so kind of beating a dead horse, but like it is just very different to see this offense with this kind of quarterback. And like now it's to the point where when I say that, I'm not talking about like how deep the guy can throw. But like when they get into into drop back stuff, you can see a quarterback that's been asked to do hard things before. So he's comfortable doing hard things. Like, okay, I can work 1, 2, 3 on the front side. And instead of just going to the check down and saying, hey, you never go broke making a profit, like every offensive coach says to its quarterback, he'll actually go to the backside dig and be able to drill that throw to a Cooper Kupp or to a Robert Woods. Like that to me is what's starting to become more impressive. And I think that we've kind of talked about this before, just what that does for an offense when you don't have to gain 5 yards on first down. Like you can be okay in 2nd and 8. That's what this game was. Like the Sunday night game that they had against the Bears was like a great look at like perfect premium look for everything. You're going to get the busted coverage off of the play action stuff. You're going to get these bunches where guys are just releasing guys down the field. You got a good enough run game to make it happen. Like we got a perfect look at it in week 1. This week, because I think the Colts defense has like a very underrated good run defense, you know, like they're decent enough to be able to keep you in some 2nd and 7s and 2nd and 8s every once in a while. We got to see a look at like, okay, what is Stafford going to do when it's not a premium look? And that's what I walked away with, is like, okay, they can survive. It's not going to be a DOA situation and they don't have to get into a bunch of gimmick empty, just trying to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands in 1.5 seconds type of stuff.
Yeah, so I think in the Bears game, and I tweeted this out, that like, oh my God, look at what this offense looks like with a real QB. They don't have to go under center. They can just drop back all the time. You know, in the Colts game, it was more under center stuff. They're going to run their wide zone. They're going to run play action. So it looked more like the McVay offense. And plus, you saw a lot of the concepts that McVay and Shanahan run all the time. But like you said, it's just like you're able to do so much more with that quarterback there. And there's I think it's like 2nd and 14 in the second quarter when he hits Woods over the middle on that little right sidearm thing over the middle.
Yeah.
Well, he's creating this window with his eyes, with his shoulders, and that's something that Jared Goff just didn't do.
He couldn't do. Like, he just could not do.
So McVay doesn't have to just be like, okay, well, I got to get this. How do I get Robert Woods open on this 10-yard in route? And it's like, no, let me just call the play. Like, yes, obviously I'm doing my due diligence to get into the right calls and stuff, but like let me just call the play. And then my quarterback can be a real human being and he can go and make a play. So what he does is they have you know, Woods and Kupp in the trips, and they have Woods and Kupp in the slot, and Kupp runs this little 5-yard hitch route, whatever. The Colts are showing press cover one with, I think, Bobby Okereke as like the lone kind of free rat hole defender. So how are you supposed to get a 10-yard dig route open against a rat hole defender? You stare to one side of the field and he's going to open up his body and move, and then you come back, and then obviously Stafford has the ability to throw it sidearm and still get it was a little low, but he still gets completion and they get the first down. The only thing I will say is, like, Goff threw a ton of turnover-worthy plays and interceptions. So it's not like it's not like, oh, Goff just threw checkdowns and didn't throw the ball to the other team. He did. But the thing, the flip side with the Stafford stuff is like the interception, where it's a super tight window throw. He overthrows it.
I have a note on that. I was like, it's on dagger. And it's funny because even the pick that he threw on dagger, I'm like, that's probably something Goff wouldn't try either. Because they actually covered it well. Like, the Colts covered it well.
Yeah.
The safety did a good job of taking that high over. And then, obviously, it wasn't the best throw because it was a tight window. You could see he was trying to get it over those second-level defenders that were underneath that dig route, so he couldn't get it there. But even then, I'm like, okay, so that's probably worst-case scenario. We talked about that as well. Like, Stafford's probably going to have 2 or 3 games this year where the Rams probably lose because he throws two picks, you know, trying to force something over the middle of the field. But in the aggregate, like, this offense is exactly what I thought it would be. And it's nice to know that, like, McVay is also not leaning too heavily on any one thing. Like, there's still the screens. There's still the quick game out of empty. He's still able to use Cooper Kupp on those slide routes, you know, those tunnel screens and stuff like that to get those yards after catch that they need. But again, like, when they're not on schedule, you can actually just hand it to the quarterback and say, hey, go get us one, and he can go get you one.
So they started the Rams, the Bears game. Their first keeper of that game was the touchdown to Van Jefferson on the corner post, right? So, you know, all these offenses coming from the same system, what they do is when they boot the quarterback, when they you know, people call this a keeper, what they do is the receiver to the side where the keeper is going, where the quarterback is rolling to, he generally has a corner route, and his job is to keep that corner back high and out of the intermediate area where they have the intermediate crossing route and the flat route. And they, you know, if you want to, and this shit's open all the time, and you dump it off to the flat route, you get a 4 yard gain turns into a 10 yard gain, whatever.
Right.
And then their first progression off of that, all these teams is, okay, well, we're going to show the corner, and then we're going to break it back to the post. So that's like their number one shot play. And then you saw it. So Van Jefferson catches a touchdown on their first boot of the Stafford era against Chicago. And then first boot in the Colts game is the same thing, that they're not, they don't even care now. I mean, obviously this offense has been studied so much throughout the defenses in the league. So everyone knows that it's a corner route. So even you can even start the game already with a double move off of it.
Right.
But here's the thing. Colts played it well. They were in one high. The safety didn't bite down. They played the crossing route really well. So nothing there. Stafford throws a check down to the running back across the field.
Are you talking about the one all the way across the field? Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Jared Goff ain't doing that. No. And they pick up a first down, and they get tons of yak, and they get a first down. Another one, they're running our favorite play, a leak concept. Usually Y leak, but it was Robert Woods, so I don't know, Z leak or X leak or whatever. It gets muddied. Robert Woods can't get off. He kind of gets jammed up. They got Van Jefferson over the middle. It's man coverage. He can't get off. You know, it's not really a good red versus man, that little, like, over the ball, like, intermediate over the ball, like, hitch or whatever. Now he's under pressure. Because, you know, you can't protect on play action from the pocket for so long off that look. Man, he just slings it sidearm from one hash to the other sideline to Cooper Kupp. And it's 3rd and 1. They get a first down. They pick up, like, 5 yards. It's like, again, that's just not what Jared Goff can do. So it's like, besides the fact that you're getting a deeper play, you know, the quick game is not even the same. Like, they're not even running as much quick game because they don't have to. They don't have to. It doesn't have to be McVay who's, like, scheming up these rubs and picks to get the ball open. And then Stafford can just do his own thing. I agree with you. There's going to be games where it looks bad because Stafford throws 3 turnover-worthy plays in tight windows and whatever. But for the most part, it's really fascinating what they're doing. Okay, I tweeted this earlier. Cooper Kupp and Kyle, pronounce it properly. Cooper Kupp and Kyle Juszczyk play the same position.
They do.
And it's fascinating watching Kupp, who's, like, becoming one of my favorite players in the league, because, hey, they're in, like, the first play, the second play, whatever. They're in a you know, quote unquote ace formation. So one running back, 2 receivers spread wide, and then 2 tight ends. You know, like, so it's like a really long, like, 2 tight ends on either side of the tackles, basically. But who's the other tight end? It's Cooper Kupp.
Right.
Yeah, he's not lined up in a 3-point stance, but he's standing there in a 2-point stance, and it's like, what's he gonna do? He's gonna cut off the backside. Like, I'm not saying, and, like, it's not perfect. Like, he's not amazing at it because he is a slot receiver.
Right.
But it's like, he's doing that. What did we see last week? 49ers and Lions. I haven't watched the 49ers game this week yet, but Juszczyk, what is he doing? They're in ace formation. They motion him from a fullback to the tight end. Cut off the backside. Like,
cut out the backside,
Drift stock. Okay, drift stock is my favorite play in football right now. I'm talking a lot here. I'm so excited. So, like, drift stock is my favorite play in football right now. Basically, what it is you have the drift route that's a huge play in all this offense, these new style offenses these days. 5 yard post route. Five step post route, 12 yard mm-hmm. post route, something like that. Off play action, off the wide zone. And that they hit that, all these offenses are hitting that all the time. But what they do is on the kind of the front side, if the drift route isn't there, the quarterback can work a wheel route. They call it a stock route. So the slot receiver will run up, oh yeah, we're running the football, blah, blah, blah. And then he's going to fake a stock block, and then he's going to run a wheel down the sideline. Juszczyk ran it against the Lions. They love it because that's a good personnel issue to have, putting Juszczyk in the slot. Oh, we're going to run the ball, and then he runs the wheel. Didn't throw it to him. He actually has caught a few of those in the past for San Francisco. Cooper Kupp down the sideline. Drift stock. And I say it's the same thing that we just talked about with Stafford. The drift route is not there. That's the number one read. You reset for a wheel route down the sideline to Cooper Kupp. Again, running the same type of routes that Juszczyk runs in San Francisco. Okay. Enough about the Rams offense. Chiefs Ravens, one of the best games that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on the Ravens offense?
You know, there's probably been more conversation away from the podcast with me and you talking about like Greg Roman and what the Ravens are going to be on offense than we spent about anybody else on the offensive side of the ball going into this year. And like, I know that it's okay, I think, for everybody to have some criticism on what this offense is and it, or is not. But we cannot lose sight of what it does well, because the stuff that it does well is hell for defenses. Like when they get into that 22 personnel set, and I was messaging you about this before the podcast, but they do this thing where they'll get into like this diamond pistol formation, right? So you've got Mark Andrews and Pat Ricard standing right next to Lamar Jackson. You've got whoever the running back is that still has both ACLs intact behind them. And then they run this kind of like, they run this zone read, but the way that they put it together is you're reading the end. So you have an arc block from one of those kind of fullback bodies between Ricard and Andrews. And then Andrews or the opposite will come in and kick out the backer. So it's like you're getting rid of both the players that a defense would use to be able to defend the zone read. So now what you're really doing is putting the end in a situation where he literally cannot be right. If he forces a keep for Lamar, they have a blocker for the run support player, and now he's got the edge on you. And if he stays wide and plays Lamar, you've got, you know, Andrews or Ricard peeling up on this linebacker and kicking him out, and now it turns almost into, like, zone insert. So, like, stuff like that is super impressive. I'm actually planning on writing on that last drive. I think that you pointed this out to me, that they ran basically everything.
I was about to say
that exists on the earth. And ate up so much clock and was able to stay efficient with it. Like, that was extremely impressive to watch. And then the last thing I really took away from it is we kind of have to reframe what it means when we talk about asking a lot out of a quarterback, because I think people hear that and all they think about is the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, you know, I'm putting everything on Andrew Luck's shoulders. You got to check every protection at the line of scrimmage. You've got to adjust these routes. We're going to have all these kill calls, et cetera, et cetera. And that is a way of asking a lot of a quarterback, but there's no way you can watch Lamar and not say that, like, he's in the top 5% in terms of like workload for a quarterback. He basically has to be, even when they're healthy, he has to be their best perimeter runner, their best downhill runner. And what it does is it forces all these one-on-ones on the perimeter, but they don't have 6'5" guys. You know, you're not dealing with all pro receivers. So in a lot of those scenarios, he's having to beat coverage with his arm, you know, and there's just not a lot of quarterbacks that you're ever going to ask to do all of that at once. And that's what it is. Like, it's very Cam Newton in 2015-esque. Like, you got to be our best runner on the perimeter, our best runner between the tackles. We're going to set up all this play action stuff. And now you've got to use your arm to beat tight coverage because the team's got to play man against you. That's really it.
We're hoping that when Rashad Bateman comes back, that changes things. Does Sammy Watkins look tinier in a Ravens jersey than I've?
I don't know what it is. Maybe like black really is thinning. Like maybe that really is slimming for people.
He looks,
but he does look smaller.
He does look smaller, and that's like happy for him that he gets the win against his former team. And yeah, that was that last drive. Honestly, I'm glad you're going to write about it because it's one of the coolest like game winning drives that we've seen, because they didn't throw the football.
I was going to say,
barely.
Yeah.
They ran zone read. with Arc. They ran regular zone read. They ran counter bash. They ran inverted veer. And they're all, and Lamar just took it all the time. He just made plays, man.
It's like the complete inverse of that last drive that Tampa Bay had against Dallas to open up the season, where it was like, oh, Tom Brady's just automatic. There's a crossing route. There's a hitch. Yeah. There's a check down. There's a dig. You know, and it feels helpless. Like, it very much felt the same kind of helpless with Baltimore just running the ball. Like, you knew what was coming. You knew Lamar was going to keep it on 80% of the reads, and there's just nothing you can do about it. The last little thing I will say, and this is more specific to Kansas City's defense than anything, I don't understand why they play so much single high against that offense. I don't understand why they play as much cover one as they do. The busted play to Hollywood Brown, that was off a single high. They're able to rub guys off in bunch. Free safety tries to go clean it up, and now you've got, you know, Omar able to extend and hit a guy down the field on that. And to your point about, like, 11 personnel, what that does, that's going to put them in position when Bateman is healthy to where they can really start taking advantage of teams that want to get in the single high and just play with their nickel personnel and play, like, their base stuff. Because what Hollywood Brown is able to do in the slot, having a guy like Sammy Watkins to be able to take the top off the defense, and then having Mark Andrews in between, like, they have a guy basically for every level of defense that can be a threat down the field. And then obviously you have the greatest check down in football, which is Lamar keeping it when he does keep it. So that's going to be really fascinating to me. And ultimately the verdict on Greg Roman is going to, unfortunately, it's going to have to be held until we get to see what this looks like when Bateman is healthy. Because I do think that that can unlock some stuff for them offensively. Because all they run is man beaters anyways when they're in 11 personnel. It's all mesh, Y cross, four verts. It's just man beaters. They're not trying to beat you over the head with the most sophisticated passing game in the world.
I'm on the same page as you. I'm very curious about what it's going to look like with Bateman back, because I love their offense when their MVP is on the field. And of course, I'm talking about Patrick Ricard, the fullback. Like, they can just do so much in the run game, and it's fun to watch because no one else is doing anything like, we've just never seen anything like this. Since the Kaepernick 49ers, which happens to be run by the same guy in Greg Roman. So yeah, I'm curious to see if they can still create an efficient offense by being more spread. Now, obviously we're led to believe that a spread run game can work. Sorry, a spread run game can work, especially when the quarterback is a threat. And then we'll see if now everyone getting with Bateman back. And we both really like Bateman's tape from the Minnesota days as a true X receiver, can win on slants, can win a one-on-one, the type of thing. Like, everyone now gets pegged down a spot on the receiver depth chart. And I think that's really important for them because it means that Sammy doesn't have to be the number one guy. It doesn't mean that Hollywood has to be an X receiver, which he was for a lot of last year.
You don't have to rely on Mark Andrews to convert every third down for you. Like, he's a fine tight end, but you probably shouldn't be asking him to do that much for your offense.
Okay, before we get to the next game, our last NFL game we're going to talk about, I just totally forgot this, but I wrote an article about Matt Stafford and the Rams offense that by the time you're listening to this will be on PFF.com. And let me tell you something about PFF.com. You guys should go and get a subscription, whether it's Elite or Edge or whatever, because it's honestly the only way you're going to read me and Deontay's articles, because they're usually locked for non-subscribers. So what do you get with a PFF subscription? Locked article content, as I just said. PFF's NFL and college football betting dashboards, which are fantastic. Grade-powered projections, cover probabilities and betting values, 0 to 100 grades of every single player, including the top rookies on every team, player prop tool, which shows a plus and minus value for every NFL prop, and so much more. Check out the highest graded players from week 2 and look to find early value on spread picks for week 3. I'm pretty sure, I don't know much about betting, I'm pretty sure you're supposed to get on lines early. Okay. Last NFL game, we will talk so much more about the NFL on the Thursday podcast, but last NFL game is Saints-Panthers. Panthers are now 2-0. Saints coming off that huge win against Green Bay. Shit the bed. Now, ton of players out, ton of coaches not there, but they just could not move the ball at all. Kamara had like 5 rushing yards.
Yeah,
like I think maybe 100 yards for Jameis and a couple turnover worthy plays. You watch the Saints offense, what did you see?
I mean, starting with Jameis, I think of all of the all of the people who were wondering whether or not he was a different player, I think was probably unfair to pump the idea that he would be a completely different Jameis. Like, Jameis is still Jameis. Like, and it can still be functional with Jameis, but you're going to get a few of these, like there was on Sunday. One thing that I will credit the Panthers with is that anytime they got into those passing, into obvious passing downs, they're double A mug look, so they have both linebackers standing up in the A gap. You got two defensive tackles outside the guards and two defensive ends outside the tackles. Like, that was a huge problem for New Orleans in protection, and I think that probably missing your offensive line coach doesn't help with that. But they were able to do so many different things with, like, bringing a nickel off the edge, bringing the weak side safety off the edge and dropping a guy out, being able to bring both backers, completely bluffing the look and dropping out and just playing regular zone coverage. Like, they got so much unblocked pressure, especially between the B gaps, just off of that look. So that was an issue. I don't think that not every team does it or is as committed to those mug looks as what the Panthers are. So maybe it gets fixed up. But outside of that, like, scheme-wise for New Orleans, one thing that I thought was really interesting is that when they're in 11 personnel, there are kind of three different worlds that they live in. So the first, and the one that really stuck out to me, and I was talking to you about it before the show, is they have the six offensive line package that they like to go to at 11 personnel. So they'll bring an extra offensive lineman in, and really what it's for, part of it is to run the ball, right? You're able to create, like, 12 personnel looks. Well, with having 11 personnel bodies plus an extra offensive lineman. So that part makes sense. But the part that stood out to me was they're able to do that, or they like to do that, because they want to get Kamara out in the route early. They want to just free release him. And if you free release the back and you're in regular 11 personnel, there's really only one protection you can run. It's got to be big on big. And you don't have anybody to help you protect the quarterback if there's any unblocked pressure, or if there's a free runner, or, you know, there's a bust in the protection. So that way you're able to stay kind of balanced in your protection, get three guys on one side, three guys on the opposite. That helps, and that gets Kamara out, especially against a backer. And I think that's what's really the most important thing, is I think that what the Saints are trying to do is avoid empty as much as they can. Because if you get into empty, now the defense can kind of pick what matchup they want. You can zone it off a certain way. You can get a safety on the guy. You can get a corner on the guy if you need to. It's easier to avoid the mismatches that Pete Carmichael really wants for Kamara. So that was the first thing that stood out to me. Then when they're in regular 11, they have their spread look, which is like four open. So all four wide receiver threats are out there. And that's when they get into their quick game stuff. And again, a lot of teams, when they want to get into quick game, they go into empty. But same issue. If you're going quick game, they also want to have the ability to hit Kamara out on those checkdowns as an extension of the running game, right? To try to get him some yak yardage, see if he can make a guy miss. That stood out to me. And then if they really want to run the ball out of 11 and they have their regular bodies on the field, they get into condensed splits. And that's when they kind of steal all the McVay stuff, right? All the jet sweep, all the bootleg, all the wide zone stuff. So that was really interesting to me, is that they have these three different worlds within 11 personnel. But because of Kamara specifically, kind of still have to defend it like it's out of nickel. Can't really get in the base, because then they can really pick on who they want Kamara to be matched up with out in coverage. So that's going to be something that I'm going to be looking at with the Saints going forward this year.
I think the issue here is you want to get all these things, or most of this stuff you're talking about, is getting Kamara out. Kamara is he's my favorite football player in the world, right? But like, he's like any running back who is a great receiver. He is better when there's a true X receiver on the field with him. And this is the problem. Because you're like, oh, God, we have to figure out every fucking way to get Kamara. You can't play in the slot. He's not a slot receiver. He's got to play in the backfield because you got to give him handoffs, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, well, we got to free release him because our receivers are not good. Like, they're not good at all. Like, they were, you know, Marcus Callaway, he's not good. Sorry.
I was going to say, there's really no way around it, dude. It's okay. There's no way around it. The guys are just not good. They don't have anybody who can win in one-on-one situations right now. And you have a quarterback that kind of needs wide receivers that can win one-on-ones in order to operate the best way possible. So this is going to be a recurring issue this year.
Yeah, and now you're hoping that, you know, you said no O-line coach, and Eric McCoy is out, so you slide Cesar Ruiz to center. He hasn't played center in a couple of years. Calvin Throckmorton, he's like whatever at guard, and then the other guard, Andrew Speed, is just like, I don't know what to say about this guy anymore. Yeah. So, you know, it's not good. The interior was not good. Like you said, they whether it was just a clean, like a one-on-one pass rush rep that the guards or the center lost, or they're just getting free rushes the whole time. And it just put them in a hole early. And then the flip side was Carolina's offense looked pretty good. Obviously, we like a lot of the pieces there on the offense. We don't like the quarterback. But he sure looks good. And one of the things that I just kind of didn't understand was Saints play man. Saints, without Marshawn Lattimore, without Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, decided, I'm going to play man.
I guess Adebo had a good game, and they said that that's all they needed to see.
Adebo had a good game against in Jacksonville against Green Bay, and then got targeted 11 times.
Yep.
Gave up 9 catches because they just played man. And it's a weird thing because – I guess you wanted to spin down and get in the box and you'll play with one high safety and deal with McCaffrey in a certain way. I guess I get that, but you just don't have the horses. That's a good receiving core, man, with Robbie and DJ Moore. Like, it's a good receiving
Terrace Marshall and McCaffrey out the back. Man, like, they have guys. That is not a weak receiving core by any means. So like you said, the quarterback is a problem. That's the issue there.
So you're playing man. And you don't have a pass rush because Marcus Davenport not playing. His backup or whatever, like Tano Capasino, had a good game against Green Bay. He not playing. You know, you're still without, you know, all these other guys on defense. Could get no pass rush whatsoever. And so you're playing man with no pass rush. Like, forget it. Forget it. Against an NFL team, like, forget it. And that was a little surprising to me how much they were living in that world. And then, you know, you couldn't get him to third down when Dennis Allen does his real good shit. And honestly, like, the Saints are not as good as they looked in week 1. And they're probably not as bad as they looked in week 2. They're not going to go 17-0 like I thought a week ago. Okay, so we're done with NFL. Again, catch us on the Thursday morning podcast where we're going to talk more NFL with a special guest. Before we get into college, Deontay, Home Field Apparel is coming out with their USC stuff, finally. It's Home Field Magic because, you know, even though it came out a week late, you have to assume that they had a lot to do with Clay Helton getting fired. So Home Field Apparel, if you don't know, is a premium collegiate brand out of Indianapolis. Incredibly comfortable, officially licensed apparel with vintage college designs. Home Field is in the middle of big new Saturday season 2, where they just launch a new school collection every Saturday at noon for 16 straight weeks. So they had Georgia, North Carolina, Florida, and this week, USC. Go to homefieldapparel.com. Put the promo code in PFF for 15% off your first purchase. Homefieldapparel.com. Promo code PFF for 15% off your first purchase. All right. College football. Clemson. They suck. What's wrong with DJ and what's wrong with Clemson's offense?
The offense is bad, man. The offense is bad. Bad. It's bad. It's bad. And what it's reminding me a lot of in the passing game is exactly what it looked like when Kelly Bryant was a starter the first year. And I don't understand why it's like that with DJ, because DJ has arm talent that Kelly Bryant obviously did not have. But I think that part of the issue is, and this is something we pointed out after the Georgia game, they will not commit to using DJ as a runner. And the run game that they have, their regular run game that they have, isn't good because their offensive line isn't good.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it's going to take for them to make some kind of adjustment. But, I mean, you can see on simple stuff like just trying to throw a screen, Georgia Tech is slipping offensive linemen. Like, they can't even get hands on guys. So I'm starting to get concerned that they might end up losing a second game because of what this offense looks like right now. The defense to me is still, you know, it's still excellent. You know, we talked about this. They brought literally everybody back. And everybody that they have on defense is better right now than what they were last year. That's saying something. So they're going to have a championship-level defense, but this, to me, is the exact same year that Kelly Bryant had where Trevor Lawrence took over the year after. The quick game stuff I don't like. They're not able to generate any explosive throws over the middle of the field. I cannot watch them throw smash anymore. I can't watch them throw spacing anymore. These are plays that everybody has. I'm not saying that you can't run them. Everybody runs them. When we talk about Bama in Florida, I'll talk about how good Bryce Young is being able to operate through some of this stuff. But that's all they do. It's all just high-low stuff out on the sideline, horizontal stretch stuff in quick game. And I don't see enough across the middle of the field. I don't think they may have run like three play action reps in what I watched, and none of them were good. It's not like anything with crossers. They're not trying to hit double moves. Like if anything, you can always just keep your tight end on the field, leave your running back in on protection, and run 989. You know,
I don't understand why
you do that.
Shouldn't every team just run?
Especially if you have three NFL wide receivers. They have three NFL wide receivers, and they don't do anything that's going to help them, you know, get open or beat one-on-one matchups. They're still running the offense like Hunter Renfro's in the slot. It's Justin Ross, dude. Like, now that he's healthy, he looks like an NFL receiver again. Run real offense with these guys. That's been frustrating.
But it's not going to change because they haven't changed in 7 years, 8 years. So.
Nope.
And I think DJ, like, he's doing a good job of like going through progressions and not like putting the ball in dangerous spots, but the accuracy isn't perfect. I thought the accuracy wasn't perfect in the two games last year, the Notre Dame and Boston College game, but he gives you so much more because A, he's a guy who can stick around the pocket and go through progressions. He doesn't worry about bodies around him because he's such a thick boy. And you also just have the ability, if they wanted to, like you said, they don't want to, but you have the ability to run him as much as you want because he's a thick boy. And so the accuracy was like, okay, well, it's not perfect accuracy, but, you know, he gets the job done. He has such a cannon. But then, you know, you watch, remember the Notre Dame game, and him throwing the ball down the field. Get through for like 400 yards or whatever. Like, let this man be himself. Let this man be we're going to pound you with a whole bunch of different quarterback run stuff. And then we don't need a precision passing game. We can play action, get a deep post route, get 989 going, et cetera, et cetera. Especially like you said, with all the talent they can have coming at you down the field, instead of just asking him to throw the corner out every damn time. Like, oh my God. Like, he's just not that precise of a quarterback that this is. And he's not unprecise. But there's a couple throws that I'm sure he wants back, especially in the Georgia Tech game. Definitely in the Georgia game. So,
the nature of throwing corner, you're not going to hit every corner out. Like,
that's why they're open, because exactly. Defenses give you that on basically every coverage.
Like, that's a hard, hard, hard throw. It's a very difficult throw, and And we talk about this, you know, with USC, just like these high degree of difficulty throws that you ask your quarterback to make. And there's a difference between asking a quarterback to make a hard throw because a payout could be a touchdown or a big-time explosive play versus just asking a guy to throw along the sideline every time you want to throw the ball down the field. That I just don't know what that serves. I'm trying to figure out the flow of the game watching them, and I'm like, okay, I don't understand. Okay, so you keep throwing these corner routes. What's the next thing? Are you building on that? Is there a double move coming? Is this guy going to snap a dig next time? But it's not that. And I don't get it. I don't get it. You have a quarterback with a strong enough arm to work the intermediate areas of the field, and they don't do it enough, in my opinion.
Okay, we were asked on Twitter to do a little breakdown of Coastal Carolina's offense, who are now 3-0, I believe, after the win at Buffalo. Close win, but they get the job done. The first thing I'll say is we happened to talk to their co-offensive coordinator, Willie Korn, on this here podcast. You can go on YouTube, type in college football, PFF, CFB podcast, Willie Korn, something like that, and you will find our interview. So it's very in-depth. But we're going to do a little quick rundown of it. You watch Coastal. What did you see, and why is that offense what it is?
So specifically, I think the person who reached out to us was really interested in talking about the RPOs that they run. And to me, when I watch, like, they run RPOs the way an option offense would, which is that they call it when they want something very, very specific. Meaning they already know that if they get into a certain formation, if you're on the hash, they're going to get the look that they want. You're going to spin a safety down, play single high. Okay, we'll run the glance, you know, or we'll get in a cut split. Your corner is going to be playing inside leverage because it's man. When he should be outside, we're going to run a speed out, and maybe we can turn it up to a wheel if we think we can catch him sleeping. They have their bubbles, you know, their orbits off of certain looks. But that's really it. Like, if they're calling an RPO, they're calling an RPO because they know they can get you in the look they want to throw the ball. It's not an RPO. They're not an RPO offense in the sense of, like, we're actually trying to figure out what coverage shell you're giving us, and then we'll react to that. It seems more like they're calling it like, all right, now we've got enough information to make us feel like every time we get into trips, they're going to spin. Or every time we're in 2x2, they're going to play quarters. Well, we'll run these bubbles in 2x2. We'll run these glances in 3x1. And it's not that simple. It's not as simple as that. But that's basically the approach. Is they're an option offense. If they want to run option, they're going to run the option. You know, the more classic looking option. But if you give them the look that allows them to run RPO, then they'll run RPO, and the goal is to throw the ball. If they have to hand it off, they will, but the goal is to throw.
Someone had made the point of comparison on one of my tweets about them. I don't remember when it was recently, that this offense reminds them a lot of the kind of I formation Nebraska option offenses. Of like the, I guess, like the 80s and 90s. And I thought that was a really good point, because if you go back and watch those old Nebraska teams, it wasn't like I form triple option, left, right, left, right. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't really going down the field. I mean, they're running their run game diversity was immense. They're running a ton of stuff. And that's kind of what Coastal has to do, because they don't recruit big offensive lines. So you can't just run like a shotgun zone based triple option attack, because you're not going to get a push. Like, you're just not going to get a push. So they do a lot of weird stuff. Their base play is a trap. You know, they'll catch it, and then the quarterback will make it kind of look like it's a kind of a triple option look from the backfield. And then it's a guaranteed give, and they're trapping the end who, you know, kind of has to, like, play it slowly because he thinks he's being read. Yep. And then bang, he gets, you know, I think they run it with the center a lot, you know, and he's getting trapped, and they run inside of him for some really big gains. I think they did it on a fourth down for a conversion against.
It's almost a way of running like outside veer without actually being veer.
Yeah, that's
you're
exactly
able it. To hit. You're able to hit the edge without having to read it to get to it.
Yeah, and it's like it ends up being, because you're in pistol, it ends up being like a same side thing rather than the back coming across, so you really can hit it quicker and downhill and get right inside that trap block. And then you just run a trap, and trap is great. I got no problem with trap. And then they also do something. I haven't seen it this year. Maybe they have run it, but they do some weird ass tackle arc. I remember in like the BYU game last year, again, it's just using the smaller offensive linemen. Okay. We can't just power people to death. You know, we can't just double people and just push them. So we're going to use the tackle as what a fullback or a tight end H-back would do, and he's going to lead, even though the offensive play is this way, he's actually going to lead out the opposite way, almost like he's pulling for a screen, and they're going to run option off it. So I think just, you know, finding a way to use these smaller, undersized offensive linemen in different schemes is really what makes their offense go. And what really makes their offense go is the quarterback is super accurate, doesn't really make a lot of mistakes, and he's a super good runner. But that's, you know, hey, look, you have good players, you're going to win a lot of games. Okay, let's head over to the big game that was Saturday night. Penn State hanging on against Bo Nix and Auburn. Look, I don't like watching these games. I'm just going to say it. I think we knew what we were getting into.
Yes.
Because we know the quarterback play on both sides. You're just hoping that that something clicks for either Sean Clifford or Bo Nix, and I don't think that really happened. No. So you end up with two really stout defenses up front that aren't going to give you a lot in the running game. Auburn spun down to one high a lot. They were just going to say, no, you're not doing nothing in the box to us. But this kind of killed me was Penn State kept getting into these 2x2 formations where they would put two wide stacks. So you'd have like a tight end almost on the sideline on both sides, and then a receiver, a slot basically, like behind him in a stack formation. And you're basically just reading, does Auburn have enough players there? No, good, we throw a screen. and they were getting yards off. They're going boundary, three receiver boundary screens. They're doing this double stack stuff, getting yards and yards and yards. And then they do it with a little bit, enough tempo so that, okay, yeah, we're in a stack alignment. So you do have to have set rules if you're a defense. When you see a stack, you know, and there's like, you know, everyone has their own favorite way of playing it, how you distribute the two receivers that are out there. But if you do it from some tempo, you can get them into some odd looks, and then they hit the tight end down the seam because two Auburn defenders take the receiver. They don't handle the tight end, and then you have to do the stuff. They had another seam route where they went into what I think some people call an imposter formation. So like the tight end is lined up as a tackle, but he's really eligible because he's an actually tight end. The tackle is lined up like a way outside, and no one covers him because I think he's a tackle, and then they get a big play. But like the quarterback didn't do shit. Like, sorry, the quarterback didn't do shit. They get a play action play because play action over route, which we see in the NFL all the time, and defenses in the NFL can do all sorts of nasty stuff to deal with it. The safety comes down, the corner rotates on top, they robot the linebackers, and they should go find the route. Instead, Auburn's linebackers are backpedaling, they throw it overhead. Insane catch by Dotson, one-handed, brings it in with two, but it's like, I can't watch it. Yeah, exactly. I just can't watch any more screens. And it's like, they work. That's the thing, that they work.
I'll say the problem is that they work, so they're incentivized to run more of it.
It's tough to watch. And then the other side, we were waiting. We're like, okay, Bo, be a quarterback now. Be a quarterback.
Not happening. Nope. Not happening. We're on year 3 now. We can go ahead and wrap this experience.
It's just not there, unfortunately. It takes too much time to get to the receiver that he wants to throw to, and he's late so often, and the accuracy is just not good enough. So I'll give you a quick example. It's not going to be a quick example because I take forever to get these thoughts out. But so second play of the game, I think it was, on their first drive, they have to basically throw a double seam. So they have a seam and they have an out route. They're playing against cover two. So if you're playing against cover two, if you don't want to hit that seam that kind of bends and gets inside the safety, you're going to throw to the sideline because you have the hole shot there. And the safety was giving him all sorts of indications that he was going to jump on that bender route from the slot. I think it was a tight end. So like, where do you have to throw the ball? To the sideline. They throw it to the sideline. You're throwing a nine route against cover two. Throw it to the sideline. And the safety, again, he was so far inside on the slot route, you have so much room to work. And guess who makes the play on the ball? The safety. Like, how you put it that far inside? I don't get it. I just don't get it. And then they run it again. They get cover two again. The safety is now like, oh, this is like later in the game, third quarter or something like that. Safety is now like, oh, whoa, I've seen this before. I'm not going to get so hard on the slot route. I'm going to play it even. So he plays it like midpoints of two routes. So now it's like, oh, guess what? Middle of the field's wide open. And Bo Nix takes six hitches and misses the slot completely. Wide open, wide open. And it's like, all right, well, I guess this is just who you are. They can get some stuff going with the run game with him as a scrambler, as a runner, like whatever. But it's just not there. And it's just the third year and it's not there. And this is the game for you, man. This is the game for you. And it wasn't there. Okay, well, let's get into, before we get out of here, just want to remind you guys that the Too High Podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to identify your needs and address your goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at Western and Southern, westernsouthern.com/PFF. All right, before we get out of here, short episode, before we get out of here, talk to me about Bama UF. Talk to me about Bryce Young.
So two things. Number one, I don't know why teams blitz Bama period anymore because they're so good at picking stuff up. Like, I don't think Grantham kind of figured it out by the second half, and I think that was part of the reason why they were able to get Bama to stall out a little bit. You can't blitz those guys in general. Their offensive line is extremely well coached, and they pick up a bunch of stuff. Number two, their wide receivers are good enough to beat single coverage if you do blitz them. So now that really starts to shrink your playbook of options when you do blitz them. And then lastly, and the part that's just the most unfair about it, that they have a guy who's starting for his first year, and he's like amazing against pressure. He's so good against pressure. And I still think there's room for growth. Like, there are some times where you can watch him and see that he still kind of gets 7-on-7 feet every once in a while, where he's just kind of patting around and not necessarily being intentional about where he wants to set his feet. And that's why I think that he misses on like some of those glances and some of those 5-yard ins, because his feet aren't always tied to where he's trying to deliver the football. But against pressure, to have a guy that's this poised, that's able to throw like explosive passes against pressure, it's not just the check swings, it's not just the hitches, it's not just the over the ball routes. He's able to hit a wheel route, you know, he's able to hit these fade routes against pressure, knowing when it's going to come uncovered based on the design of the play, and being able to hang in long enough for it to be uncovered or to be able to throw it open if he has to. That's kind of what I'm really, really impressed with Bama. Like, and this is probably just going to be another year where they just go ahead and walk to 12-0. The only team that we're going to see them try them maybe is like Georgia. And we're probably going to see those two teams play each other twice. That's kind of what this looks like. There, I don't know how you get in the way of what that machine is offensively right now.
I'll flip and talk about the Florida offense, which looked kind of better than we thought it would with Emory Jones, who has not had a good start to the season. Here's the one thing. So Anthony Richardson, from what I understood, he was injured. He was dressed but injured, so he was never really going to get into the game unless something catastrophic happened. This would have been the, like, they would have had that 10% more, because what was the only thing they could do in this game? QB run stuff.
I was, they had a nice, especially in the option. The second half would have been so huge.
Anytime Emory Jones dropped back to throw the football on just a drop back pass, it just wasn't good. You know, they had a couple where they were able to get scheme some receivers open. Dan Mullen did it, but other than that, any type of drop back, Emory Jones just wasn't it. And it just, that's what he's shown the first two games and now three games in the season, that he's just not that type of quarterback. But he is a pretty good runner, and they were able to run some option stuff, get the ball to the edge, and really deal with Alabama's defense that way. And that's how they got back in the game. But if you had Anthony Richardson, who's an elite runner, maybe that becomes a couple more plays. I just want to get one more thing before we're out of here. The two-point conversion. The long mesh two-point conversion. So they had done this earlier in the game. We talked about this before the show started. We didn't really understand what they were doing earlier in the game with it. And then they do it for the last play. The problem was, now, at the end of the day, if your O-line gets a push, you win, okay? But the O-line did get a push, so now you got to win the scheme wars to a certain degree. And I don't really understand what the point of taking that long to mesh and come down the line. What should have happened was they do this long mesh, but there's no give. And Jones keeps it. And then the free end who they're reading on the long mesh ends up being blocked by the running back who is never getting the ball. And now you're in a quarterback run situation. What ends up happening is they mesh, and then he hands the ball off, and then you're just in zone read, and it's like, well, you got to win on zone. And they didn't win on zone, and they got stopped, and I don't get it.
Well, I mean, that's the game.
And that's the game.
As our friend Richard Johnson says, this game is about blocking and tackling. Dude, if you want to run a play like that and you don't block, you lose. That's what it is.
All right, that's enough for us. Quick episode, just a recap episode. We'll be back on Thursday morning, like I said, with a special guest talking all things NFL and some college too. And find us Thursday morning and wherever you get your favorite podcast from.